Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us today. We love those Sunday mornings. Homegrown, taking us into Sunday morning wake-up call. Nothing better. Rick Moore here, leading you into another educational Sunday. So nice, so easy. So good for your mental health. Our guest today, the so smart Shonell Sen, research and policy analyst at the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at the University of Virginia. Good morning, Shonell.
Hi, Rick. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for being with us. Dr. Sen comes to us from the Weldon Cooper Center after earning her doctorate at Penn State. And although officially an applied economist and demographer, conducting quantitative research and policy analysis used by government agencies, business, and journalists and nonprofits, a lot of her recent work has been devoted to building population projections, analyzing labor market behavior. Today, we'll be discussing what I think is some fascinating information that may be lost in the outside headlines. So thanks for sitting down with us.
Thank you, Rick. Glad to share all the research.
Well, these are some articles. We're going to talk about three that you've written in the past couple months, correct?
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of times I find that these are headlines that that get put out there, and then they often get the one-minute follow-up conversation on an NPR story. They might get 30 seconds elsewhere. Excuse me. And that's about it, unless you see the printed article itself. And I wanted to tie them together a little bit today. I noticed that they had a lot to do with youth and family and employment. And so I wanted to bring you in to talk about the work you've done. How much time does it take to do one article or one piece of information?
The answer is going to be, it depends, which is the typical researcher trope. But in general, some of these web pieces come out of a single question, and we may take a week or a couple of weeks to come and work on the research. But there are some other projects which come from different contract research projects with state agencies, maybe with the governor's office. So some of the findings come from bigger research projects that may need 6 months. So it depends. It could be anywhere between a couple of weeks to half a year.
Okay. Because you look at them and you see, by the way, you can go to find these articles, and in any of the articles, I believe, any of the research that's done at the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service, UVA, you can find them at a site called statchatva.org. Think about that as statistics and chatting about statistics in Virginia.org. So statchatva.org. And you can pull up these articles if you look at Dr. Sen's work, S-E-N. So Dr. Shonell Sen. And we'll talk about three of them in particular today. So let's bring up the first one that I wanted to talk about. Are women in Virginia choosing to have children later in life? So let's talk about the basic story. What year did you, or did this issue start? What year did women start choosing to have children later in life that was noticed?
This is less a point in time, but more as an overall trend. So what we find is that over the last 30 years, in 2017, the birth count was the lowest, both in the U.S. as well as in Virginia. And this is a steady trend that we see. There are fluctuations over the long run, but specifically for the current data point that we are looking at in 2017, the U.S. had about, the lowest number of births in the last 30 years.
And what ages do they become moms now versus then?
So in the past, the trend typically was by their early 20s, women started starting families, having children. But the data now shows that women are putting this off. So they tend to have children now in their late 20s, more in their 30s and 40s. And a large number of reasons lead to this, but we do see this significant shift in childbearing where women are pushing having children over to their later years.
So when you say that, what we're noticing is that it has moved from the early 20s to the late 20s, that doesn't seem like a long adjustment. Or is that it's moved because there are such a significant group of women waiting until the 30s and 40s? Is that what has made the number move?
Right. So it's not just that they're moving from their early 20s to the late 20s. It's a larger shift. So imagine having a child when you were 21 versus now having it, not even considering having a child until you're 29 or 30 and pushing it further. So maybe before you had your first child at 20, in 21, now you're having your first kid at 34. So that is the shift. It's more of a trend where everybody is individually choosing to do this, and the statistics tell us the bigger picture, but it's individual decision-making that's leading to this shift that we see.
Are women having fewer children overall because of this, or are they just waiting until later in life to start having the same size family?
So the answer could be yes and maybe to both of those. So
academics, it's always the same.
We always hedge. There is no clear yes or no. The gray area in between takes over all the space. Black and white is right at the end. So just going back to what you mentioned, we do see that more women are both delaying childbearing and also are having fewer kids overall. But the data is only a snapshot. So what you see is what is happening today. These women, say if you're at 35 and you have your first kid, you may still wait and have three more by the time you end your reproductive cycle. So there is still the opportunity for women to catch up. We haven't seen that. That's the future that is unknown. We have to wait and see how that future evolves. But so far what we see is, yes, women are slowing down. They're having kids later and are choosing to have fewer so far.
Again, our guest today is Dr. Shonel Sen. She's a research and policy analyst from the Weldon Cooper Center at UVA. And we're talking about a couple of her articles that I've tied together as youth, family, and employment. Currently, we're talking about one of her articles, Are Women in Virginia Choosing to Have Children Later in Life? The article talks about related fertility statistics and whether that has a role in women delaying children. I'm not sure what related fertility statistics are.
So fertility statistics are different metrics that we use. You can talk about the average number of children the average woman may have. You can think of for 100,000 women within a particular age group. So just women, say, 30 to 40. So there are different statistics that are developed so that we can talk about these long-term trends easier. But overall, these statistics just help us see are just numerical interpretations of what is really happening. We shouldn't tie ourselves down by these statistics, because numbers can be used to tell a story however we please, but what is more important is in the long run, what are the patterns that we see in these numbers, not just what the numbers themselves are. So if I were just to riff off here, you see that the statistics tell you a story, but what they don't show is why this is happening. You could talk about other variables, women getting attaining higher educational degrees, or more women participating in the labor force, or even the economic climate may put people off of childbearing. So there are different background factors that work. And so the numbers don't tell you the whole pictures.
Interesting, because I obviously is not knowing what related fertility statistics was defined as. It made me questioned if that had something to do with birth control.
Yes, family planning practices also are more popular. They're more well-known. So that definitely plays a hand, so that people are now having greater autonomy over their reproductive choices. And that definitely filters into the statistics that we are looking at here.
Because we mentioned at the start of this conversation that the change has been ongoing for 30 years, correct?
Or longer, but yes, it has hit the lowest point in the last 30, yes.
So has there been any conversation, maybe not in the study or fully noted in the study, but has there been conversation about family planning, birth control, and how that might be a part of the role? Because medically, marketing, and all the roles that may play in how it fits into current lifestyle.
And so there is a lot of, though this particular research does not address that issue, there is a lot of literature out there which looks at how decision making has evolved, how childbearing decisions are being made over time. We have these different policy papers as well that are available to show how, whether it be family planning practices, whether it be other policy initiatives that may have started these changes, but there are other factors that build in here. One particular thing that really plays a role here is how teen pregnancy rates have gone down, and that has had a lot to do with how these societal challenges have been addressed by different policy initiatives. So teen pregnancy has seen a definite downturn, and that also feeds into this number that you're seeing. When you see that overall childbearing has been delayed, the decline in teenage pregnancy is also playing a role in this larger story.
13 minutes after the hour here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. With our guest today, Dr. Shonell Sen, Research and Policy Analyst at the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at UVA. We're talking about our first article under discussion, Women in Virginia Choosing to Have Children Later in Life. You mentioned that Virginia was below the national average 30 years ago and still today. Is there any idea why Virginia would be below the average?
Right.
Both times?
So we can again look at other variables. So what we find is that in Virginia, women tend to have more advanced degrees. So more women have a bachelor's degree or higher, and they also have a higher labor force participation rate than the country overall. And so if you're studying longer and if you're also more engaged in the labor force, both of these seem to have an effect in women's childbearing decision making.
So education plays a key role in when you might have a baby. Is that because you make thoughtful decisions, or is that because you're in the labor market, in the labor force?
It's a combination of both of those. So one, if you are engaged in pursuing education longer, it takes time away from both having kids and raising kids. And again, times have changed. So in the past, there were more women who were both raising families and pursuing educational opportunities simultaneously. As time has progressed, women are not doing it simultaneously, but more sequentially. So perhaps they complete their educational careers, either join the labor market and then start having families, or maybe have families and join the labor market at the same time. But the educational window has definitely expanded, and that is taking time away from when they were starting families earlier in the past.
You talk about the academic window expanding. How about the medical window expanding? The improvement in the medical ability, wouldn't that have played a role as well?
Absolutely.
I mean, in previous time periods, mm-hmm. whether we go back to the 50s or 40s or however far we want to go back, I realize we've only at this point spoken about 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. But in the past, a woman's window to have children would have been earlier in life, and now we're talking about a woman having a child late in her 30s or even in her 40s. Mm-hmm. Would that have played a role as to how far a woman could put off her childbearing?
So typically the reproductive window in the demographic circles is considered to be, we start measuring it all the way up till around in the mid-50s to late-50s. That's the, and obviously there are women who have children later, but that is the typical age bar. And what we do see is that women are pushing it further back, 30s onwards, and it is extending all the way to their later years. Gains in medical science, as well as more freely available information and awareness about family planning practices, definitely plays a role. So, but this is again one of those moving pieces. We don't know how each individual woman chooses, but what we do know is that there are several factors, both having longer educational time period, greater labor force participation, family planning practices, considering the overall economic climate. These are all input variables that are changing the way women are making their decisions. So we may not be able to pinpoint what this particular factor led to that particular decision, but we know that these four or five factors are being taken into account by women, and overall we see that they are changing their lifestyle choices, the family planning decisions that they are making. So family planning practices definitely is a big role, but is not the only factor.
But it's also got to be, and again, I realize now I'm playing someone who's pinpointing what's important here, but it's not just the length of the cycle that a woman could have a child, but think about the life cycle. In the past, a woman having her child at age 35 might be 50% of her entire life cycle. But now a woman having a child at age 40, in the past, a woman having a child at age 40 might be 66% of her life cycle. And now a woman having a child at age 40, it's only 50% of her life cycle. So that sort of information into making her decision, I think, would play a key role.
100%. So exactly. Having longer life expectancy changes the way we live our lives. It's not just that we are living longer, but also the way we are living has evolved over time. And so knowing that you have more life years ahead of you, you may push certain life events further into your future. And that is absolutely fine. That is what progress is. We have medical science that has given us longer lives, and we are making full use of it.
18 minutes after the hour, again with our guest today, Dr. Shonell Sen, talking about one of her articles, Are Women in Virginia Choosing to Have Children Later in Life? I want to take our break just a minute or so early and then come back, because I have a couple questions to finish up on this first article. And here we are in Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, WPVC. Don't we love them for having us on every Sunday? We should if we don't. And we love the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at the UVA for sending Dr. Shonell Sen, allowing her to come over here and talk about our articles. The first one we're discussing, Are Women in Virginia Choosing to Have Children Later in Life? Dr. Sen, we're talking about this first article about women choosing to have children later in life. What does this say about the family tree? Because if a family, because it's not just a woman in many cases, who is the family is choosing to have its child at age 35 or 40, then that's less time with the grandparents, if at all, in some cases, and certainly with a great-grandparent almost non-existent. You know, I'm the oldest of the oldest of the oldest, and so when I graduated high school, I still had three great-grandparents, three great-grandmothers alive, and so for many people, even then, that was, you know, difficult to imagine. And at this, with this article, going by this, with a family not choosing to have a child until they're 35 or 40 to 44 range, you'd never know your great grandparents.
Absolutely, and I would just say this, you're very fortunate to have met your great-grandparents. I never got to meet my grandparents either. So just the structure has definitely changed. Family dynamics has evolved. And with the passage of time, both the desired number of children or the preferred family sizes also change. So all of these characteristics will definitely change the family tree, the family composition. But that is just an eventuality that is asserting itself. People will make smaller, again, this is the economist in me, but people make micro decisions and they affect the macro outcome. So women choosing to, you know, make different life decisions will affect the family structure, how kids interact with their grandparents, how many siblings this child may have. All of those are things that will change.
You mentioned the change in teen pregnancy. Is that an overall decrease or does it remain the same in lower level socioeconomic?
So it did. We did see an overall decrease. So what we found is that there was about a 55% decrease in teen pregnancy over the last 10 years. This number does differ across regions and by race and ethnicity, but this is an overall decrease. And this is one of the most significant factors that we see when we are discussing women's childbearing shifting. This decrease in teen pregnancy is an overall trend and is one of the most significant ones.
Last question, at least for now, on the again, are women in Virginia choosing to have children later in life? And you said early on that we couldn't quite determine whether or not the families and the women were choosing to have fewer children, but it seemed to be leading that way, correct?
Yes, that I would agree to. That's what the trend seems to indicate.
Is the United States leading towards numbers where it can repopulate itself?
So there are different, again, this takes us back to people talk about a total fertility rate of 2.1. That is the threshold, which we assume is when a population can replenish itself. But the U.S. has migration happening. So both fertility
maybe not.
Oh, well, we shall see. But there is still a significant amount of migration. And so with that, we do see that the population is quite stable and sustainable so far.
Okay, great. I really appreciate Dr. Chanel Sen joining us today. It's 24 after the hour here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Dr. Sen, I'd like to learn a little bit more about you and why you are doing studies on economy and statistics.
So my background is in economics primarily, and I did take on demography in grad school. And both of these, at least for me, my personal motivation, it helps me understand human behavior. That was what my interests stemmed from. And it uses larger trends to see how you could figure out how 100 or 1,000 people behave and work backwards to figure out individual motivations, what makes individual decision-making, work out what makes a person tick. But again, so that is where some of my research interests stem from. Now, in terms of the articles that we are talking about today, a lot of these may be from personal research interest. A lot of these are also research questions that are brought to us by different state agencies, by different nonprofits. So, for instance, the out of work articles that we recently worked on at the Cooper Center Demographics Group were from a statewide impetus to figure out what is Virginia's labor market situation like. So there are different reasons behind how each of these articles come about and how these research projects are selected.
So your mind works from wanting to know the group to the single person.
Pretty much. The original idea was, if I understood, you know, everybody tries to figure out how we as individuals operate and we as a society operates. And I thought economics and demography was a nice inroad into trying and figuring that out. I know people would think psychology would be a good way to go, but I always found economics and demography are where the numbers tell us a lot about people at large, as well as both the micro and the macro, the individual as well as the society and community. So I can see both sides of the picture.
All right. You talked about some organizations bringing you these stories. Where did the Virginia Choosing to Have Children Later in Life, where did that come from?
So that did not come from a particular state agency. That came from us being curious. So the Centers for Disease Control keep releasing these periodic data sets. And so when their latest data set came out in 2017, we wanted to know how the vital statistics have changed nationwide as well as in Virginia. And so that was, again, motivated by our own research interest to see how the three main the pillars of demography are births, deaths, and migration. And so this was about births. How is births and childbearing changing over time, and how is it changing the structure within the country as a whole, as well as within Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia specifically?
All right, so let's go to one of the other articles that we have here with us today. Who are Virginia's disconnected youth? And again, you can find all the articles from the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at statchatva.org. That's statistics chatting about statistics in Virginia.org, statchatva.org. And Dr. Sen, S-E-N, you can see her articles at statchatva.org. The next one is, who are Virginia's disconnected youth? And first of all, you see a steady decline in the unemployment rate since 2010. So talk about that.
So what we do find in Virginia is that over time, the unemployment rate has gone down, but the labor force participation has also gone down. And when I use these words, what I mean is that those who are unemployed are people who may not have jobs right now, but are actively looking for a job. But there is a whole set of other people who don't have jobs right now and are not even looking. So that secondary group of population may also be growing over time. And that makes the whole chunk of people, those who are not even in the labor force, it makes that group get that group is getting larger in size over time. And that is a matter of concern. So just looking at unemployment statistics is not telling us the whole story.
When you say they're not looking, does that mean that they are, in what way are they not looking? Have they given up? Have they, are they used all their, because I know that there are folks who have gone through their unemployment and so they're not allowed to look anymore, or I didn't phrase that well, but...
Right. I believe what the going through their unemployment that which you're referring to may refer to unemployment insurance, but this is not what we are talking about now. What we are talking about is just people who may have either suspended their active search for employment or have never considered participating in the labor market. So however they came to make their decision may vary, but what we find is there are some people who don't have jobs and are looking, versus there are some people who don't have jobs and are not looking. And both of these groups combined make up those who are not in the labor force. And in Virginia's case, what we find is over in 2016, for instance, the unemployment rate was just 5%, but the people who were not participating in the labor force was about 35%. That's a giant jump.
Good grief.
And so when we just talk about those people who are unemployed, we are only talking about a fraction of the people here. We need to look at the bigger population or subpopulation here who could be actively re-engaged into the workforce and be gainfully employed.
When you talk about 35%, how many? What size of that is youth? And what age group, what age level are you talking about? 15 to 16, 18, 21?
So typically when we talk about youth, we are stretching the definition a little bit, but we will talk about youth as being 16 to 24-year-olds. So this is a group that is typically known as the disconnected youth. So these are individuals who traditionally would either be in pursuing academic ambitions, or they would at least have a job. But when we talk about these 16 to 24-year-olds, they are doing neither. Neither are they in school, nor are they employed. And hence, they are disconnected from any of these frameworks. And that leads to long-term negative life consequences for this young population in Virginia.
I don't know. Dr. Shonell Sen, because my thoughts are just rambling around on this particular topic. Dr. Shonell Sen, research and policy analyst from the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at UVA. We're talking about this article, Who Are Virginia's Disconnected Youth, which I have a feeling that there are a lot of people who would be interested in reading this article. You can go to statchatva.org. What are some of the numbers? You said 5%, 5.3% are officially unemployed, but 35% are
not in the labor force.
Not in the labor force. And what group of that are disconnected youth?
So the disconnected youth are a smaller fraction of that, obviously, because most of them are still in school. But what is of concern here is those that are not in school and are not working between these age cohorts, 16 to 24, also are stifling their future opportunities. So they are not only currently unemployed or currently out of the labor force, but if you just think about their future outcomes, they will suffer long-term negative consequences. And so when they age into the more, typically when we talk about ages 25 and older, we think that is the prime working age. So when these children, these kids who are currently neither studying nor working, when they grow, so 10 years into the future, they are older, they will face more further challenges, not just what they face today, but they will be incremental challenges that they face, because currently a lot of these kids are still living at home, living at with their parents. They have these support structures, but as they grow into their older into their future, they may face negative life outcomes with having lower incomes or having a chronic inability to find and keep steady jobs. So this is a problem that will just get compounded over time.
And what are ways to solve these? I mean, other than getting a job now or going back to school, which obviously has its own tuition issues, which we could do another show on about the problems and how to solve tuition debt.
So what we do find is that low education attainment is a very strong determinant of being out of work, irrespective of the age. And so for youth in particular, this disconnected youth, we could have targeted policies that attempt to reduce high school dropout rates. We could provide apprenticeship programs and training opportunities. We could try and open up career pathways for this vulnerable youth population. And so there are different policy initiatives that could be implemented over time. Now, none of these will be like a silver bullet, but all of these will help and provide incremental gains over time.
But aren't there, and maybe the study didn't go into this much detail, but certainly there are disconnected youth who graduated from college who then had trouble finding a job. I mean, we hear about this all the time, about the college graduate who moved back home and then can't find the job that's related to their degree.
Absolutely. So when we were looking at the story in Virginia, we did find there are some people who drop out of school. Others may finish school but not work. Some may seek work but may not find work. And others may just get disillusioned. They may look for work long enough and not find any and just give up because the situation seems hopeless. So all of this is a larger chronic problem, but we could do smaller systematic changes to try and draw them back. So there are these retraining programs that are often available at the community colleges, at the CTE, so career and technical education, for instance. So these are places where if people have graduated out of, say, school or college and have had a gap in years where they have not had any sort of professional skills being developed, they can go back, get re-engaged, figure out what are the places in Virginia's economy where there are gaps and get retrained to go and join the labor market there. So there are opportunities out there. Sometimes it is not just a lack of opportunity. Sometimes it's a lack of awareness. And so that is another direction where just spreading the awareness of what opportunities these kids may have would be beneficial in the long run.
37 minutes after the hour with our guest, Dr. Shonell Sen from the Weldon Cooper Center. We're talking about several of her articles today in regards to youth and family and employment. Currently, we're talking about one regarding Virginia's disconnected youth. One of the quotes in the article on the disconnected youth says, "Circumstances may interrupt or prevent this smooth trajectory." In this case, you're talking about moving from academics to work, correct?
Yes.
So has this sort of thing happened in previous generations or with previous economic troubles? Because this article happened, or study was done from 2010, correct?
Right. This is the most recent data, all the way up to 2016-17. And I'm going to hypothesize here, but it is true that in the past, so the economy has changed. The demand for a higher skill level is more predominant now. In times in the past, people could have a high school diploma and still have a job that would be enough to sustain them and their family. Versus today, in the knowledge economy, specifically in Virginia's knowledge economy, people do need to attain not just the base level of education, but they also need to work for higher either academic credentials or be it skills training, be it getting an apprenticeship degree.
Bachelor of Arts doesn't even get you anything anymore.
Exactly. People still have, and this is anecdotally, I've heard loads of people who went in with such hopes of, taking up the social sciences, and yet when you go into the job market, there may not be jobs available. So yeah, that is definitely a fact.
But, did you notice, looking backwards, and again, I realize that this is from 2010, et cetera, but prior looking, if not research, did you see that in the 1970s or other troubled economic time periods, were there disconnected youth of any time?
Yes, disconnected youth have existed throughout time. It's just that the number, so there have been disconnected youth in the past, be it 50 years ago, be it 100 years ago. It's just that the problem is more noticeable now because there are more of them.
That's where the Beat Generation came from.
Oh, yes, Jack Kerouac, bring it on.
Okay. Yes, we'd love to have our Jack Kerouac step forward now. Thanks, Dr. Shonell Sen. We'll be right back. Hang tight. All right. This is Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Thanks for being with us today. And thanks to the Weldon Cooper Center for sending Dr. Shonell Sen over to talk about the articles, because I was fascinated by these. Again, the youth, family, and employment. And the Virginia's disconnected youth that we're talking about at the moment, you talked about some of the lasting impact that the disconnected youth could have. I want to talk about that a little more, because we see that all the time, or whether it's, you know somebody across the street, or you just see it as a story on a television show about somebody moving back home to live with their parents. How is this solved? Because putting something into the local community college, if the youth is already disconnected and given up on possibly finding a job, I don't know that you can get the same person to go to the community college course.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So, I mean, this is just, you can't clap with one hand. You need both hands. So while you have these awareness programs, policy initiatives that make these opportunities available to people, these disconnected youth themselves also have to be proactive. They also have to step up and take on these initiatives, use these opportunities to get re-engaged and involved into the economy at large. And so you need both sides to work in tandem. So just providing opportunities without these kids taking on those opportunities, again, will be futile. So we need both sides to work in sync.
And I have to say, it's not just the youth, it's also the parent. have you seen the, I believe it's an Indeed ad, and I don't know if everyone has seen it, but there's an Indeed ad. The youth has come to live at home again. And he's walking around with his phone in his hand. He's doing everything, staring at his phone a lot. And the parents are looking at each other like, why is he always looking at his phone? Can't he do anything? It's obviously this message that they're sending to one another. And finally, he sets his phone down, and the father picks it up to look at it. And just as a message comes through from Indeed saying you have two appointments, and so they realize that he has been doing something, not just playing on his phone. Mm-hmm. So the parents need to understand that they have a side to do it. You say clap with, you can't just clap with one hand, but there are different generations with different things that have happened and things that happen in different ways. So as a different generation from the disconnected youth, you need to understand that the policies can't just be written by the adults to make things happen for the youth that need them to happen in their method and their style. So I think that disconnected youth should also be part of how the policies are written. Yes. And that may be more helpful in getting these youth connected again.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes a lot of focus groups are conducted to figure out what solution will work, because there has to be a lot of symbiosis happening here. And we do find that learning not just about how these disconnected youth would prefer to re-engage, but also recognizing that the economy has changed. As you mentioned in our conversation earlier, the economy has changed. So the entry-level jobs, the skill requirement has actually been set to a higher degree now. And so more is expected today. And so hence these disconnected youth, their parents, their families, the school systems that they came from, the workplace that they may eventually be employed in, all of these have to work together. And it has to be a multitude of forces working in tandem. Just putting out a training program or just blaming the kids would be unfair. But again, also not asking them to take on the responsibility of trying to get engaged. As you talked about in the Indeed ad, the kid was actually looking for a job, which is where I would like to leave it as. I would try to be more optimistic and hopeful and hope that these kids can be re-engaged back into the economy.
So the third article that I have here has to do with gender differences in Virginia's out-of-work population. So tell us a little bit about that.
So this is another finding that wasn't surprising, but did show up in every way we cut the data. When we were looking at labor force statistics, in Virginia, there are a large number of individuals who are currently not working. And of the almost 650,000 Virginians who are currently out of work, 60% are female. So 60%. And this includes both women who are don't have a job and are looking, and also women who don't have a job and are not looking for a job. So this is both of those. So 60% of these out-of-work Virginians happen to be female. Now, we do know that there are lots of structural barriers and societal norms that result in this non-participation, but remembering that in context, we do see that the numbers tell us the story where there is a huge gender difference and a gender divide in Virginia's out of work.
So how much of this has to do with academics? Are women more likely to have a lower degree, a higher degree? I mean, where does that play a role?
So without going into gender, what we do find is that lower levels of educational attainment, so basically either just having a high school education or less, plays a significant role in keeping people out of the labor market. But for Virginia's women in particular, this was an interesting finding. We find that of those people who are out of work in Virginia and have a bachelor's degree or more, nearly 73% are female. So what this tells us is that there are lots of highly educated women who are currently not employed. This could be self-selection, this could be other issues, but this is what the numbers tell us.
So we're not sure whether it's self-selection or not.
Yes, we can't pinpoint what the cause behind this is, but typically just in terms of other research, we know that women do have a disproportionate share in caregiving duties, be it to their children, to the elderly. They take on more household activities. So there may be self-selection going on, but there may be also other reasons. But we do see that a large number of Virginia's women who are currently not working are very highly educated and qualified.
But okay, does this disagree with the first story we covered? If there were fewer children and they're waiting until later in life?
So that the stories we can paint on a larger canvas and figure out how women's workforce and employment decision making is tied in with the educational attainment that they have had, and again tied back to the childbearing propensities. But in this scenario, for instance, we are not thinking about whether how many children these out of work women have. All we are saying is that they happen to be out of work.
That was a very academic answer.
I'm sorry, but that's I happen to be an academic.
Dr. Shonell Sen from the Weldon Cooper Center giving me very academic answers as we discuss her very academic paper. So it's not that academic. It's just very entertaining and very interesting at statchatva.org, gender differences in Virginia's out-of-work population. One of the things that I found interesting in this article is the things that you think might be keeping women more out of work is there was a place to click on other things to read in this that took me to driving accidents.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So why would driving accidents and driving issues keep women off the road more than men?
This I will challenge in terms of there is a reputation that women are poor drivers, but I
didn't say it was drive. I didn't say it made women poor drivers. It made me question whether they were more concerned.
In terms of driving accidents on their way to work, is that where
well, it is,
transportation opportunities?
Yes, transportation issues.
Right. So in terms of a lot of the study looks at Virginia overall, and in places where you don't have, so if there are women who don't have access to their own cars, and also there is not enough public transportation opportunities, then a lot of people are again prevented from getting a job. They can't get to the workplace. So you see, having better transportation options is good both for the economy as a whole, as well as for these women who may be prevented from getting jobs because they can't get to their jobs.
I found that interesting. Just made me wonder if driving accidents keep women off the road, but not men. So man's like, oh, I can get around that. I don't care about that.
Well, women do have a higher life expectancy than men.
Well, hey, I'm not going to argue that men are troublesome drivers. How many of these choices, or do you not know, that women make are natural versus economic to sit out? Do we know that?
So, yes, this particular research does not specifically look into that, but there is other research out there which shows that sometimes, for instance, childcare costs are so high. So, for instance, you're a qualified person, you could get a job, but childcare costs are so high that it is not feasible. It's worth your while to stay out of the workforce and take care of your kids rather than pay for daycare and not make enough of a wage or a salary to cover that cost. So you see, there are personal choices that also come into play. So which is why when we were looking at this, we were looking at other policy issues, and there are different ways where provisions for accessible or affordable childcare and elder care, having, as you mentioned, better transportation options, flexible work hours for parents of very young children, improving gender equity overall in the workplace are all examples of strategies that could help narrow the divide.
And have the numbers changed over time for men and women? Like fewer women sitting and maybe more men now as the roles have changed?
So, this was more of a point in time study. So, but in general, what we do find is more men are unemployed. So there are, as I keep reiterating, so more men tend to be unemployed. They don't have a job, but are looking, versus more women are not in the labor force altogether. So they don't have jobs and they are not looking. So see, men are still trying to access and find jobs, versus women are less likely to do so. And this trend is more or less true across time. So even historical data will show the same trend.
So it wouldn't matter if, for whatever percentage, some men may have become the caretaker in a family.
Yes, that is happening more and more now, but it is not, the numbers aren't high enough for it is a trickle, not a tide. So we still haven't encountered enough of those scenarios to bend these statistics in the other direction.
11:54 here on the Sunday morning wake up call, as we talk about gender differences and Virginia's out-of-work population. So you were talking about the large number of women who were sitting out who had a high academic degree. And there's no way to know whether or not that's by choice or by force. Is that a way to phrase that?
At least not in the data that we looked at, because this just looked at the choices they made and not why they made it. There could be other ways of looking at it by conducting deeper analysis. But for now, what we do see, sometimes the reasons differ. In places in more rural areas in Virginia, you may find that they have the educational degree, but they are stepping out of the workforce because the opportunity doesn't exist. They don't have the jobs available. Versus in parts of Northern Virginia, you may find that one of the spouses makes enough of a salary so they don't bother to go into the workforce. So they just self-select and stay out. So there are different parts of the state where different reasons play out.
So I'm going to try and tie these three together with a very convoluted set of questions. Let's go back to the disconnected youth. Would a disconnected youth be living at home?
we do find a significant portion. So 55% of the young out-of-work Virginians are found to be living with their parents. So that's a really significant number. And more 16 to 19-year-olds, so more of the teenagers, are still living at home. And a lot of the 20 to 24-year-olds may have found alternative accommodation.
And we talked about women are more likely to be without a job. And once you add together the officially unemployed and the disconnected, not in the labor force, would these difficult situations lead young mothers to, as a group, unconsciously choose to have fewer children and wait until later in life to have their children?
Perhaps that could be a factor. Typically, in terms of being a single parent or having very young children who need care, are considerations that keep women out of the workforce. So if you think about the reverse side of it, whether when these are hindrances and hurdles you will face, that could lead into the decision-making about how many kids you will have. So it works both ways.
So you're sitting at home, you're talking with, talking amongst your family, whether your husband or your partner, about whether or not to have a child, and you mm-hmm. see across the street elsewhere in your mm-hmm. neighborhood that there's disconnected youth, you're concerned about your labor, your income because mm-hmm. of your family, and you know what the female situations are for labor market, and you decide, oh my goodness, look what's going on, look at these negative issues, maybe we'll wait until later in life. I think that should be your next report.
Looking forward to working on that. Thanks for the idea, Rick.
Yeah. Well, what is your next report?
Can you
share that with us?
Absolutely. So the one thing that we just did is we tried to do national projections. So the Census Bureau does not do projections for all 50 states. And so what we are just currently working on and released is the 50 state population projections across the U.S., 50 states and D.C. So that's what's happening right now at the Cooper Center Demographics.
And tell us, where does Virginia stand with that?
So Virginia as a whole, it is growing, but it is growing slower. And also aging is something that we see. So the baby boomers are aging into their retirement years. So we do see those two trends are significant in Virginia. And all of this is available at demographics.coopercenter.org.
The baby boomers are growing, but...
Well, they are aging into their retirement years. So they are still... So as the baby boomers grow older, they are retiring. So the workforce is seeing an impact of that. So that when we look at the population projections by age and sex, we do see that the older age cohorts are rising in actual size versus the cohorts, the population that is following the boomer population cohorts are smaller.
So I have to be dependent on the disconnected youth to carry me?
So bring them back into the economy. That's what we say.
Dr. Shonell Sen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Lori Haas next week to talk about gun control issues.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.